Monday, July 14th, 2003, and I'm interviewing Mr. Tom Kelsey. When and where were you born?
I was born December 13th, 1942, in Shelby County, Indiana.
Okay. What did your father and mother do for a living?
My father was a laborer during World War II. He never served in the military. My wife was more or less a traditional housewife.
Mm-hmm. So, did you live in town then?
No, I was born on the family farm that's been in the family since the 1880s. And it's still in the family. It's in rural Shelby County, Indiana.
Okay.
And my relatives still live in the place.
So what were some of the chores you did as a child?
Well, I grew up on a farm. After I became older, after maybe 8, 9, 10 years old, mm-hmm. We took care of livestock. We had chickens, we had livestock, we had milk cows. And typical farm chores, milking cows, gathering eggs, got bigger. We run farm tractors during the summer, took care of farm work, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Cut firewood. We didn't have electricity until 1954. And so I was about 12 years old before we had electricity. And we had to, we cut our own firewood, heated with firewood and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. How is farm work different from it is today?
Oh, much, much different. The farm equipment is much, much larger. And the way they farm here in Kansas is much different. When I grew up, the farms were what we would call, I guess you would call an organic farm, in that they were self-contained. Mm-hmm. We had our own garden, we had our own milk cows, we had our own chickens, we had a few hogs. And the crops we raised, we used to pay the taxes and buy salt and things from town, but we basically lived off the farm. Mm-hmm. Now the farm is much, much larger. Farms are much larger, and they generate cash. And it's kind of common for people to have chickens and pigs and sheep and goats and things that we had at that time. Mm-hmm. A typical farm back where I grew up would maybe be 80 to 100 acres. And out here, what are they now? A couple thousand acres, I suppose.
Yeah.
Farm machinery. A farm tractor when I was a young boy, a farm tractor might have 30 horsepower. Mm-hmm. Now it's not uncommon in this area to see tractors of 300 horsepower.
Wow.
So there's been huge difference in the way of techniques and farm machinery.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do for fun as a kid? Obviously you didn't have video games or Nintendo.
We didn't have TV, we didn't have electricity, but we didn't lack for fun. I mean, we had horses. My dad worked with, he had a horses, and we rode the horses. They were work horses, but we rode them as saddle horses. And then, of course, I had seven brothers and a sister. We had a large family, and we always had plenty to do. We had, where I grew up in southern Indiana, there was lots of water. We had streams. Mm-hmm. So we fished, we hunted, we camped, we done all the childhood things. And no, we didn't have video games, computers. That was unheard of. TV was a novelty then, particularly during my early childhood.
When did you get your first TV?
I think about 1956. Mm-hmm. Which I would have been about 14 years old. It was black and white, and it was quite a novelty. It was really quite a novelty. I think we maybe got one or two channels, and now I think cable, I have something like 70 channels now, so there's been a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to the movies? You lived on a farm. Did you get in town enough to go to the movies?
Not very much. We were pretty much, we didn't travel very much. I can recall, we lived within 40 miles of the state capital, which was Indianapolis, and I was 16 years old before I ever even got to the state capital. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty rare for us to travel very much. We stayed there on the farm, went to school, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Went into town maybe on a Saturday afternoon to pick up a few basics and groceries, but we pretty much lived on the farm. If you looked at the Mennonite community now, it would be roughly equivalent to how we lived if you took away their electricity and their telephones and things like that. We were plain folks, but everybody was plain at that time. That's the way people lived, mm-hmm. particularly country people.
Mm-hmm. So where did you go to school, in town or?
Well, we had country schools. Mm-hmm. I graduated from a little school called Needham in my elementary school. And later, when I graduated from high school, I graduated from Hope. It's kind of interesting. My brother, we had moved right before I graduated from the 8th grade elementary school. Mm-hmm. And he graduated from Green Township School, and his class was so small that there was only 6 that graduated. And they all loaded up in the principal's 1948 Chrysler and went from Green Township School in rural Indiana and drove all the way to Denver. That was their graduating class, which was quite a thing. You know, he had a big old huge 48 Chrysler limousine. Uh-huh. And they drove out there, they saved up money, and they drove all the way to Denver, Colorado and back. The principal and the teacher, and the principal and his wife took the mm-hmm. students.
So you said you graduated from elementary. Did you go to high school then?
Yes, I went on to high school. I graduated, I think, in 1956 from elementary school. And then 1960, I graduated from high school at Hope, Indiana. I was one of the last graduating classes from the old Hope High School. After that, they moved and, I think, consolidated. Mm-hmm.
Did they have as many sports teams and activities in school when you were in high school, or?
Well, yes, but the emphasis, we didn't have football, but we had basketball and track. Mm-hmm. Basketball, of course, in Indiana is very, very popular and still is. But basketball and track, there wasn't quite as much emphasis. I never learned to play sports. I never played sports because we, as a farm kid, we had farm animals to look after. Mm-hmm. Instead of staying for basketball practice or whatever, I had to go home and take care of livestock. Mm-hmm. And we had milk cows, and we milked them by hand, and you had to milk them night and morning. And that just pretty much put an end to any kind of activity, extracurricular activities, mm-hmm. such as sports or anything else after school. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, my father would, if we needed field work done, they'd keep you out of school to do the field work. Well, because the field work was a matter of survival. Yeah.
Was that an often thing? Did you get held out of school a
lot? No, not very often. But the school, back in those years, the schools were a little more understanding about the need. You know, the children represented a source of labor. Mm-hmm. So our schools didn't start until probably early September, and they were out early May. So you were available, you know, but it wasn't often. But the teachers were pretty understanding, you know, if you had to stay home and help the folks.
What did you do after high school?
After high school, I graduated from high school in 1960. And my mother started me when I was only 5 years old in first grade. So I graduated from high school, I was only 17. And I didn't turn 17 until my senior year. And I couldn't find a decent job. And college was out of the question at that time, mm-hmm. because of the expense. I was one of 9 children and so forth. And so I got a job driving a truck. I drove a milk truck, picked up milk, 10-gallon cans for 10-gallon milk cans for a dairy operated by the Farmers Co-op. Mm-hmm. And I ran that from May until I enlisted in the service in March of 1961. But that was 7 days a week. I operated that milk truck 7 days a week and got $35 a week.
Was that a lot for then?
No, it wasn't a lot, but it was not unheard of. Mm-hmm. $35 a week. Give you some idea, gasoline was 25 cents a gallon. You could take your girlfriend out for a date and have go out to a movie, have something to eat, buy a little gas for your car for $5. So, you know, it was $35 was, but no, it was not very good. It was not horrible, but it certainly wasn't very good. But it was for a 17-year-old boy, it was not bad. Mm-hmm. And then I supplemented my farm and my truck driving in by working for area farmers after I got off the milk route in the afternoons. Typically I run from about 5 a.m. in the morning to about 2, and after 2 o'clock I'd work maybe until dark for some farmer putting up hay or driving the truck or something. And I typically would pay 75 cents to a dollar an hour. So I would, on a good week, I'd make $50 or $60 in a week, which was a lot of money then. It was a lot of money for the time. Or a fair amount of money for the time, I should say.
So you enlisted in the service about 1961. That was about the time of Vietnam, wasn't it?
That would have been a little bit early for Vietnam. Vietnam was starting to get pretty well jailed. Well, I don't know when you make the transition. The French were involved in Vietnam in the 50s. And I think Dinh Binh Phu, the Battle of Dinh Binh Phu, was in the late 50s, 56, 58. And so we were starting to get tangled up in that. But I enlisted in 61. I was in the Air Force. And by 1963, there was some people being sent to Vietnam as advisors in civilian clothes, carrying weapons. But I did not, by 63, I think we were getting involved in that, that I was aware of. I'm sure that there was some involvement before that, clandestine involvement. But I served my first four, I went on to serve 8.5 years in the military, Air Force. And the first enlistment, I spent most of it in Wichita Falls, Texas.
So what are, can you tell me about that a little bit? Just what are some stories of?
Well, I was, in 1961, the military was drafting, and I had no opportunity to go to college. And I looked at the military as a chance to fulfill my military obligation, whether I was going to get it. I was, if I did not enlist, I would likely be drafted, most likely into the Army or the Marine Corps. But if I enlisted in the Air Force or the Navy, that perhaps I could learn a skill. And so I briefly considered the Navy and decided I didn't want that. And I enlisted in the Air Force. And when I did, they told me that they were going to make a weatherman out of me. And I said, what is that? And they told me, well, you will learn. So I was, after basic training, I was sent off to Wichita Falls. And basic training, I was sent to Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois. And I went through basic weather observer training there. And I think that was about 18 weeks. And after that, I went to Wichita Falls, Texas, and served for the next 4 years as a weatherman. And it was there that I discovered that I had stumbled across a pretty good, potentially a good career. I worked with the National Weather Service, or the U.S. Weather Bureau, as it was called in those days. They were also co-located with the Air Force weather people. And I seen these fellas had good jobs, good careers. So I thought, gosh, I have lucked onto something here. And so I took up quite a lot of coursework, additional coursework, and I stayed in the, even after my 8 years in the military, I went on and stayed with the National Weather Service, as it is now called. And eventually, whenever I completed my government service, military and government, I had 33 years of service. And I retired when I was head of the National Weather Service at Garden City. I also served as chief of the National Weather Service at Goodland for about 8 years, and also briefly at Dodge City. And Garden City, I think I was there 8 years. But that's getting ahead of myself. I served in the military from 61 to 65, from 61 to 69. And during that time, I served in Wichita Falls, then in the Philippines. And then I was transferred back to the States, and then went back to Korea. I served with the 2nd Infantry Division in Korea in the late 60s. And then I was discharged in 1969 and went to work for the government. So even though I did serve all around Vietnam and served during those years, I never served in Vietnam. I never really tried to avoid it. It just never came up. While I was with the Air Force in the Philippines in 1965, I did extremely highly classified work, and I was placed on travel restriction where you could not go into any kind of a area where you run the risk of being captured, because you, I suppose, during your interrogation or perhaps torture, they could get you to divulge this classified information. So I was in on a travel restriction where I could not go into places like Vietnam, mm-hmm. or where you run the risk of being captured by the enemy. So that was the reason why I suppose I never went to Vietnam. And I was on this restriction for something like 5 years, and by the time the restriction was over with, I was out of the military.
That's interesting.
Yes, well, I was considering a career in the military, but Vietnam, by the time the late 60s, Vietnam was really getting ginned up, and I was spending a lot of time overseas. I spent 31 months overseas the last 4 years I was in, and I was had a family and that sort of thing, and away from my family, and I decided I would quit, but I would stay with the weather business, so I transferred from the military service to the National Weather Service as a civilian and stayed with them.
When did you meet your wife then?
I met her in 1962, well, late 1961, and she's native of Indiana, and we were married in the spring of 62, and we were together 26 years, and we were divorced in 1988. Mm-hmm. I have since remarried after being single for now, I think, 13 or 14 years. My wife is a native of the Philippines, my present wife. Mm-hmm.
But you didn't meet her while you were over there, then?
Oh, no.
So I'm sure you told me, but how did you then end up in Cimarron, Kansas?
Just transfers. Mm-hmm. I have worked, given my tenure in the military, well, including my time in the military and the civilian branch of the military, the civilian branch of the government, I had 17 assignments. And I have worked in such places as Cleveland, Chicago, Indianapolis, Denver, 31 months in the Far East, Wichita Falls, Texas, Oscoda, Cimarron, Dodd City, Garden City, just to give you a few. Mm-hmm. But I've always been, I grew up in the country and I've always preferred small or rural type environments. And I accepted assignments to small places like Dodd City or Goodland. And when I came to Garden City back in 1985, I came to Garden City about 1985. I knew Cimarron was not too far from the airport. Mm-hmm. So I came here to live, and I've been here since December of 1985. But I had a good career in the National Weather Service. I've seen some very interesting things. I've experienced typhoons, hurricanes, typhoons, tornadoes. My specialty was radar meteorology, or the study of severe storms. Mm-hmm. And I worked with many tornado outbreaks and things of that nature.
Well, you say typhoons and that sort of stuff. Can you tell me anything, stories about those, or when you were?
Well, a typhoon is nothing. A typhoon is a hurricane in the Western Pacific, so it's the same as a hurricane. Mm-hmm. The one we had there in the Philippines, the big island, Luzon, what I can remember most about it, I think we had something like 20 inches of rain in a single day,
wow.
which caused a huge amount of damage.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only tropical storm that I was involved in. Most of my time was spent in the meteorology business, in particularly in the area of severe weather in the United States, where or away from an area that was prone to hurricanes. But I did have quite a lot of experience with tornadoes. I experienced the great tornado of April 3rd, 1964, which was a Category 5 tornado, mm-hmm. hit Wichita Falls and left and killed 7 people and done severe damage there.
Mm.
I was working at Indianapolis in this would have been 74, about 10 years later, when they had the outbreak, the day known as the killer tornadoes, where there's about 300 tornadoes in a single day throughout the Midwest and eastern part of the United States. And of course, out here in western Kansas, I spent much of my career, at least half of my career, in western Kansas. And we had a tornado and severe thunderstorm outbreaks from time to time. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, in all the years, though, that I was spent in western Kansas, we never had a fatality here in western Kansas from a tornado that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. Yet we did lose a fair amount of people, at least several people, in winter storms. So I really do think that winter storms are probably a bigger threat than, mm-hmm. than tornadoes.
Mm-hmm. I'll back up a little bit still. Tell me a little bit about your time overseas. What, did you experience the culture much, or did you stay on the base more?
Oh, I've always been open-minded. I like to travel, and I like to experience different cultures. And now I travel a fair amount. I tried to develop Filipino and Korean friends. Mm-hmm. As I said, my wife is Filipino. Mm-hmm. And I've just spent, here in the last year, spent several weeks in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And I don't hold up in a big, fancy hotel in a large city. I go out and live in the barangay, as they call it, which is Filipino word for a village. Mm-hmm. I live in the barangay with the folks. And I tried to do that in my military service as much as I could. I think that's one thing a person should do, is go out and try to learn, experience their culture, appreciate the difference. Yeah. And I very much enjoy it.
What is some of the differences between...
Oh gosh, there's so many that they're very, that would be kind of hard to explain, I suppose, but their culture is, I think you have to bear in mind, particularly the Filipinos, they have a lot of American ways. The Philippines, they call themselves the second largest English-speaking country in the world because of their population. Mm-hmm. But the Americans have had some sort of relationship with the Philippines since 1898, the Spanish-American War, when mm-hmm. we went there and occupied the Philippines from roughly 1898 until about 1950. And then we had a military presence there for quite a long time after that. But so there, they have a curious mix of Spanish influence, American influence, and then there's a hodgepodge of Malay, Asian. So their culture is rather complex, very much family-orientated people, largely Roman Catholic. And where my wife is from, on the island of Cebu, which is the second most populated island of the 7,000 islands in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Her folks are farmers. Her mother runs a daycare. But their farm is like 3 acres, and he farms with a water buffalo. And they have no home telephone. They have electricity. But they live, they're pretty much like subsistence farmers. Mm-hmm. But they're very much family orientated. They have very strong family ties. Generations live in the same area. In their culture, they're not nearly as mobile as we are. I mean, we just pack up and move 1,000 miles. But mm-hmm. to them, to be any distance at all from home is kind of unusual. But I guess that would be, I'm not sure that's a good answer to your question, but it's about the best I can do, I think.
That's fine. I know Vietnam was fairly unpopular here in the United mm-hmm. States. What was the feeling towards Vietnam for those in the service?
Well, it was very unpopular. I think probably early on, it was probably least acceptable, but the Vietnam War was a pretty traumatic experience for the country and for the people that served. I think that's one of the things that probably drove me out of the military. was I just felt there was a lot of people dying for nothing. There was something like 48,000 died, and many, many more were injured or scarred by the experience. I've always been a bit of a military historian, and it was my firm belief that it was started with lies, and it was the war. It was started based upon the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and an incident in the Gulf of Tonkin, and that was fabricated to some degree. So the war was started with lies, and it was it was just not popular in the country. A lot of people died. There was, but the United States, I think, has had a history of doing this from time to time. If you remember the Spanish-American War, the battle, remember the Maine sunk in Cuban waters, and there was talk that somebody, the Spanish, had something to do with that, and that was one of the reasons why they went to war. And then Vietnam come along, and now you see the controversy about Iraq, mm-hmm. with some of this information fabricated. So, but I think probably the biggest impact the Vietnam War had on me was it probably made me eternally skeptical of the motives of the government and what they tell you. Mm-hmm. The government lied to us much during that experience. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of men died for nothing, for no good reason, and we packed up and went home. And it was a very, very, very tragic episode in our country's history. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably, like I said, make me an eternal skeptic of motives. It's interesting to know that people that have promoted this war with Iraq, many of them did not bother to serve in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Those who now fly the flag the highest did not follow it very closely when it was their time. They ran into the National Guard or boy. It was very unpopular, and a lot of people tried to avoid it. I didn't try to avoid it. It was, mm-hmm. but. It was not a good time in our history.
So you see a parallel between Vietnam and the war with Iraq now?
No, I think Iraq is probably much more complex. I really do. I really do. If you look at the history of the Middle East, there has been conflict between the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims since roughly the First Crusades or 1300 years. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got ourselves into potentially a very much of a quagmire. But Iraq is not the kind of country where you can fight a classical guerrilla warfare, a war, because it doesn't have the vegetation and things of this nature. But I think it's not near as simple as, it's not going to be over as neatly and as simply. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of conflict between Muslims and Christian people. And I don't think that I think by and large we don't appreciate the difference in the culture that they have, their religion, and I think that perhaps if we spend a little bit more time trying to be a little bit more understanding of them instead of going to war with them, that perhaps we'd get along a little better with them. I wish very much that we did not have oil interests in that part of the world, and we did not have to be there, but we are there. Mm-hmm. But whenever you serve during the tragedy of something like Vietnam, I think it probably turns you off against all wars. A huge amount of people, innocent people, die. It's interesting to note that back prior to World War I or during World War I, the bulk of the casualties in war was the soldier. But now with modern air power and artillery, modern weaponry, most of the people that die in war are not soldiers or civilians. They're women and children and innocent people. And that's a great tragedy. And so I guess I'm a veteran who's also a bit of a pacifist. I think the war is the last solution that should. But as I said, Vietnam probably, it may be prejudice against all wars for all my life. Mm-hmm. No, I was not.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Vietnam or something.
Yeah, you were telling me about Iraq and Vietnam and the similarities and differences between the two.
Well, I don't know. I think, as I said, there's quite a lot of differences in the two countries. The way the wars are being fought and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think there are some similarities. The people who really tried to promote the war in Vietnam were just a few people at the very senior positions in the government. They was preaching about the domino effect at that time, that if Vietnam fell to the communists, that the rest of Southeast Asia would fall. And now there appears to be a few very well-connected, right-wing type people in the upper echelons of the government that are really pushed for the war in Iraq, try to make the case for the war in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And so there's similarities there that, and I think that, I'm not sure the Vietnam War was ever very popular, but it got very unpopular towards the end. And I think you're starting to see now some question about I think one of the first casualties of war is the truth. The truth becomes propaganda. Mm-hmm. And we're fully capable of spouting propaganda just like the enemy is. And we try to cast the best light on situations or cast the best light on a situation and the worst light on the enemy. And I think if you're really going to try to come to a decent, educated judgment on what's going on, I think you have to kind of dispense with some of the propaganda and do a little bit of research on your own. And right now we're getting a lot of propaganda about Iraq. I'm sure that the Iraqi leader was bad news, but in that part of the world, it seemed like you have two choices. You either have anarchy or tyranny. You got the tyranny of a strong leader, or you got the total anarchy breakdown like you have in Afghanistan now. So I don't know what choices. I think the problems in the world are pretty easy to identify, but the solutions require a little more thought. I think that's probably where we're at now.
So you got out of the military in 1985.
No, I got out of the military in 1969.
1969, and you were in the National Weather Service till.
Yeah, and I was in the National Weather Service until 1994.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So how did you get into this job here?
Well, I was a weatherman. I was a weatherman in the Air Force, and whenever I got out of the military, I applied for jobs within the National Weather Service, whether U.S. or the federal government, mm-hmm. as a civilian. And I filled out their applications and applied, and I was offered a job. Some of my early jobs that I had was a little Air Force Reserve base as a civilian at Columbus, Indiana. I also worked in Chicago and Cleveland. That was some of my entry-level jobs I had.
Was there a big difference between working in the military as military personnel and working for them as a civilian in the jobs
that
you did?
Well, I never worked for the, I didn't work for the military at civilian very long. Mm-hmm. I worked for a Department of the Air Force as a civilian for roughly 3 months, and that job collapsed. The base was closed, the base shut down, and I went on to the National Weather Service, which is purely civilian. No, there's really, but as far as the duties, not a great deal of difference. Meteorology is meteorology, whether you're wearing civilian clothes or a uniform. Of course, the staffing and so forth and the grades, you have military ranks in the military and all that sort of stuff. But basically, the job is very similar. Matter of fact, back in the old days, most of the people in the National Weather Service have done were ex-military, ex-Navy, and primarily ex-Navy and ex-Air Force people. Mm-hmm. Because that's about the only people. They were training meteorologists during those times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the civilian weather service was just full of ex-military people.
Anyway, so you were in National Weather Service, and then you retired from that?
Yes, 1994, I retired from that, and started this little business that I presently have, which is Ideal in antique tractors, motorcycles, any kind of special interest vehicle. And I buy and sell all over the country. Well, I buy here locally, but I sell throughout the country. I've sold, I think, half a dozen states. I think the last sale I made was in Wyoming. So, but I advertise on the internet, also like some of the major newspapers like the Denver Post and things like that, so, you know, get out in a wider market. I've traveled also extensively with motorcycle. I have a little dog that travels with me, or he has, and he's getting a little old now, but I've kept record of his miles, and he's traveled about 80,000 miles with me.
His name is Bud.
Wow. I think that dog's traveled further than I have.
Yeah, he's been the sturdiest. There's a couple of pictures of him. He's traveled about 80,000 miles. He's been the sturdiest with me 6 times. But I like to travel. There again, you kind of get, if you're out wandering the country, I like to take the roads less travel. I get out and wander around and stop at a place. And Bud is a great icebreaker. People will come out to talk to you. Kind of unusual to see somebody riding with a dog, and they'll come out and visit with you. And I find it interesting to visit with people. Small towns.
Mm-hmm.
Had an old gym one time in Missouri. Walked up to me, perfect old Missouri gentleman, faded overalls, maybe 75. Walked up to me, he said, I like your dog. Tell you what, he said, I'll trade you 2 cats for it. I said, no, sir, I couldn't, he's just teasing. But I think Bud and I have been in 16 states, rode about 80,000 miles together. But I've had an interesting life. I'm just turned 60 my last birthday. Had a good career with the National Weather Service. Managed to get a decent education over the years. Went to school on the GI Bill after I got out of the military. And been a lifetime student. I think went to 7 or 8 different colleges over the years. Still read extensively. Hacked through my crossword puzzles. Try to keep up on current affairs, even though sometimes they kind of upset me. But as I've found, I've got older, I've got a little bit more of a pacifist, you know. I never served in Vietnam, but I was close enough to the scene to see. I served with the 2nd Infantry Division in Korea. And I've served with enough people that were scarred up to the war. In Clark Field, where I served in the Philippines, that was an airbag station, and I used to see the debris of the Vietnam War come through there. Young men with limbs gone and body bags of the dead. I think that probably serving the military during the Vietnam War, not that I served in Vietnam and I don't want to give that impression, but I think that probably changed my thinking for the rest of my life. About war and the tragedies of it. Are you going to go on to college before long?
Yes, sir. Well, I'm in college now. I've got 1 year down, and then I plan on getting a bachelor and then maybe doing some EMT work and that sort of stuff, so.
I like school, but the last course I took, I was so old by the time I took my last course, Spanish. The teacher called me Mr. Kelsey, and I called him Chuck. There's that much difference in our age, and I thought, it's time to quit going to school. I mean, he was something like 30 years younger than I was, or 20 years younger, so. But I very much enjoyed school. But now I've with probably 140 semester hours of college work, I just don't, there's not very much that I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
That would really, so I don't go anymore.
Well, that's about all I have. If you have any other stories or anything else you can think of?
No. Oh, I suppose I could talk about things. But I'll tell you somebody might be interesting is, excuse me. He served in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Was his idea might, his thoughts might be a little bit different than mine, I suppose.
Well, I'm hoping to try and get with him.
Yeah.
This week. But, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.